Welcome to the Baseball America Podcast.
Coming to you from the Baseball America Podcast nook.
Controls your throwing strikes. The command is you're hitting the spot.
That's stupid. I'm sorry. I'm going to rant about this again because that's just stupid, John.
This is
so ridiculous. I'm tired of it.
If he was in the home run derby, I'd put him out of a decent chance of winning it against the big leaguers.
Surprised you could even hear us over the din of Ronnie McCabe's tape gun.
Here we go in 3, 2, 1. Play ball.
Welcome, everyone, to a Baseball America podcast. Along with Clint Longenecker, I'm John Manuel. I want to remind you that these podcasts are brought to you by, powered by Louisville Slugger. Leave your mark with the 2014 Attack, Raid, and Assault bat lineup this season. Stronger, lighter, farther, Louisville Slugger. And Clint Longenecker, you're coming to us from Baseball America World Headquarters. I'm coming to you from home, trying to keep my foot elevated. Clint, I'm trying to keep my foot elevated. I'm trying to see who's keeping their draft stock elevated. And that's the segue I was excited to use today. Now this podcast was not elevated. We took our sweet time recording this thanks to all the other things we're trying to do, and my broken foot didn't help. But we did a mid-season draft update a couple weeks back here, Clint. I think we're going to mostly work off of that as the subject of today's podcast. And the big news really, Clint, a couple weeks back when we finished this up was that the trends that we started the season with have just kind of that we saw last summer, that we saw in the fall, it just seemed that those trends have not abated. We're still not seeing a lot of position players, college or high school, establish themselves and prove to scouts, give scouts a lot of conviction about their hitting ability. And it really does feel like this first round has a chance to be one of the more pitcher-heavy drafts in recent years.
It sure does, especially at the top of the draft. In our updated top 10, we only had three position players, with Alex Jackson at number 4, and then Nick Gordon at number 8, and Brad Zimmer at number 10. And considering the depth of the college pitchers, you have a handful of other guys that fell outside of the top 10 that had very strong cases that could factor into that, whether it be Brandon Finnegan, Touki Toussaint, or Eric Fevey. All we've heard from numerous evaluators on all of those guys, they have a chance to push into the top 10. So really just the depth of the pitching at the top is even stronger than we actually anticipated coming into the spring.
And obviously for us, the local pitchers have been of prime interest because it's guys that we get to see, but it also brings, the reason that having Carlos Rodon and Jeff Hoffman here in North Carolina, where we're based, has been quite useful this year, is it just brings all the, brings the heat into North Carolina. Between the National High School Invitational out at USA Baseball last month, and then Rodon and Hoffman starts. I mean, Clint, just feels like this has been a goldmine of a year for seeing scouts in person and seeing a lot of top evaluators. You and I went Friday to go see Carlos Rodon's latest start against Boston College. Feels like you've seen Carlos, six times this year, maybe? 5 or 6 times?
Let's see here. I have seen him I've seen him 3 times. Saw him his first start and the last 2 starts.
Okay, that's it. Yeah,
though, we have had multiple people. I think Josh Norris has seen him twice. So in totality, I think we've seen about 2/3 of his starts on the season.
Right, and seeing as how we don't draft first overall or in the top 3, that's pretty good. That's kind of a lot to go see one guy. Considering that the Astros have someone at every start, I would imagine the Cubs and the Marlins and the White Sox do too. Pretty big, 2-team presidents there Friday, and Kenny Williams and Theo Epstein of the White Sox and Cubs. I just don't recognize the higher ups. Maybe for Miami, I did recognize a couple cross checkers, but all the teams at the top of the draft are still in on Carlos, and they're all still in on Jeff Hoffman. They're all still in on Trey Turner over at NC State. But those three guys were 3 of our top 4 guys to start the year, Clint. And they've all taken some draft hits this year. They've taken some hits in their draft stock. And the flip side of that is the guys who've passed them at the top of that draft. For us, listening to the scouts that we've talked to all year, it really does sound like the most likely consensus guys on the top of draft boards are these two high school pitchers, Brady Aiken and Tyler Kolek. And it really has a chance to be a pretty special year on the high school pitching side.
Yeah, it sure does, and it's something we've been trying to monitor throughout the year. It's just this class, and we said this throughout the summer, you know, was really known for its velocity, and that has been further backed up so far this spring. We've had six pitchers up to 98, and I believe by my count is 12 or 13 up to 96 or better. So the velocity of this class far exceeds anything. Not only just in the high end of the velocity range with Tyler Kolek, you know, touching 102, 103 reportedly, but just the sheer depth of arms. And Tyler Kolek, this is the conversation that we had had earlier, you know, could he be one of the – or could he have the most velocity of any amateur pitcher, you know, maybe ever?
That's really – and that's a huge part of this question. You know, we've got two guys in this draft class, Clint, who, according to the scouts that we've talked to, consistently hit 100 miles an hour. That's Tyler Kolek and Nick Birdie, the right-hander out of Louisville's bullpen. And they're completely different animals. You know, Nick Birdie has been through a draft before. He, you know, he's a closer. He's on a college team, so he's a little bit tough to see. Right before our last update, we were fortunate enough to talk to a couple of scouts who had seen him recently, and, you know, he'd been very good right before that. He's a wild card in this draft. But Tyler Kolek is an anomaly. Not just in this draft, I just think in draft history, it feels like we have always have a college closer who throws hard. Now, I think Birdie throws harder. You know, we've got multiple reports of Nick Birdie consistently hitting 100 miles an hour. He basically, you know, his range is 96 to 99 or 100, depending on the scout you talk to. Or they're going to give him credit for 100 being in his range, or whether they're going to say he touches 100 every time out. But just talking to people this spring, I mean, like you said, reading the reports, you know, it's not like we're the only people who do this. The consistency of Tyler Kolek hitting 100 miles an hour is startling. It's just startling to see a high school pitcher throw that hard all the time. And it just, I mean, I just was emailing with a scout yesterday, I mean, an area scout, said he'd seen Kolek multiple times this year and that, you know, he throws 100 or better every time. It's not, oh, he was really good this start, so he hit 100 like it was with Lucas Giolito. It's not, and this is also not like a guy who came out of nowhere like Colt Griffin did back in 2000, another Texas fireballer who hit 100 miles an hour. This is every time out. It feels to me, Clint, like Tyler Kolek is really unique, and this velocity did not come out of nowhere. You wrote about it at this time last year. Well, not at this time. You wrote about it last June, basically, when he came to the Tournament of Stars.
Yeah, it was directly after Perfect Game National. I mean, he was up to 97 the very first event of the summer, and that was only his third or fourth time on a mound since he came back from his injury. And, you know, it was really nice and easy and touching 99 twice in the two All-Star games. He really just knew that it was only a matter of time before he crept up and legitimately broke that 100-mile-an-hour barrier. He's been nothing but build on that this spring.
I mean, is this – so I guess the question, and it's difficult for anybody to answer, but I mean, how sustainable do we see this being for Tyler Kolek? I mean, do you imagine that he will, does he have the, he certainly has the physicality. And you said he did it pretty easily last summer. Is this a guy who you expect to go out there and be almost kind of like a Garrett Cole type who regularly registers in the upper 90s as a starting pitcher? I mean, it seems like just physically and the stuff, he most reminds me of Garrett Cole, who also was, as an amateur in Southern California, regularly in the upper 90s. I don't think he consistently threw quite as hard as Tyler Kolek.
Yeah. As far as the sustainability of not just him but of any pitcher, I mean, that's something that I don't think anybody's really qualified to say. I mean, certainly there are millions of dollars being spent, you know, on research with all these – with the injury prevention rates and whatnot. Like you said, I mean, it's easy – it's going to be there consistently. And, I mean, one of the things we know with sabermetrics is the guys lose velocity early in their careers, you know, starting in their early 20s. But, you know, he is still ramping up. So there's certainly going to be a very, very good period where he's going to be able to sit at least 95-plus for a good portion of his career.
I mean, just amazing to me also that this is a guy who, you know, that his velocity was just so good last year when he broke his alternate arm, broke his left arm, not his alternate arm, but his non-throwing arm. That story seems pretty unique to me. And yet, for all the velocity, we've got, Brady Aiken at number one. For some reason, I guess because the guy is running for office here in North Carolina, I always want to say Clay Aiken when I say Brady Aiken's name.
No.
That would be a mistake, but
please don't.
I will not. But on that high school pitching tip, it does feel like there's Aiken and Kolick, and then there's a pretty decent gap, and I don't even know if there's necessarily a consensus of the next guy. On our midseason update, Clint, we went with Tukey Toussaint and Grant Holmes. Again, two guys that you've been able to lay eyes on this spring. Tukey here at NHSI. Grant Holmes just down the way in Conway, South Carolina. But I think we've talked about those guys. I do want to talk about kind of like the next group of high school pitchers. Because I feel like I myself have kind of given Sean Reed Foley like a little bit of short shrift. This feels like a guy who, like if Sean Reed Foley were in last year's draft class, Clint, this guy would have been one of the top high school pitchers in the draft class last year, if not the top guy. I mean, again, there wasn't a strong consensus on last year's high school draft class, and the guy who might have wound up being the top high school pitcher in that draft class, maybe it's Hunter Harvey. He certainly got off to a good start this year, and he lasted 20-plus picks in the draft. So, I don't know. What's your take on Sean Reed Foley? What's the kind of the background on this guy, and how is he – feels like he steadily just keeps getting better over the course of his going through showcases in his high school career.
Absolutely. And over the summer, he was fairly consistent. The only time he really had a bad outing was at the area code games, but he was outstanding. He was one of the top two or three arms at East Coast Pro. He showed you velocity and feel for pitching and off speed. He showed you all the raw elements pretty much every single time out this summer. He was up to 96 in the fall at the Florida Diamond Club. It's a big, strong, physical body. He pitches off his fastball. He used to have a four-pitch mix in the summer, but now he's winnowed that down to he dropped the curveball, and he just has the slider. The slider's an above-average slider. He commands the fastball. He was one of the only guys that when we did our balloting for the All-Americans early in the spring, we did best tools. He was one of the only guys that had votes for best fastball, best breaking ball, and best command. And so even though he's going to have to work on maintaining his body because he's about 6'2", 220, somewhere in that range, he really is a competitor. He competes every single time out, but he really offers you a little bit of everything.
Yeah, I like the way that's what makes him so intriguing to me, is that he doesn't fit into one of these other, he seems like he's kind of like almost a right-handed Aiken, a little bit less command. He's not as premium command as Brady Aiken is, which is what kind of separates Aiken, but he seems most similar in this class in being well-rounded to Aiken to me. So sometimes, we have him 21 in the draft class. I almost feel like that's low in some ways. I know it's not, but we were very aggressive in this latest update with a Spencer Adams athlete out of Georgia, a high school down in Georgia. Came out of basketball, high school basketball, with the athleticism, and then the velocity was quite good for him. Cody Medeiros, we have some. I don't know if I'd say pop up guys, but just some surprises, I guess, in the top 50. Really felt like Spencer Adams and then Jacob Bukauskas were the two guys who at the beginning of the year, Clint, weren't necessarily on this radar, and then really jumped up. What prompted those two guys to jump up on the radar from the high school side?
Spencer Adams, he was at almost every single big event this summer, but he really showed you everything you need to just from an athleticism standpoint. I would say he's probably one of the two or three best pitching athletes from the high school side. He's a big, long, lean, projectable body. You know, you can see him out in center field at tournament starts, and he looked good out there. You know, he can actually run at least average, if not, a tick above average time. Very, very quick arm. And like you said, his basketball prowess, I think he led his team in scoring. And he really was, I think he's a four-year starter there. He's just a very, very good all-around athlete. And during the summer, the velocity was, consistently in the high 80s, touching 91, 92, somewhere in that range. And he knew that because he was very, very young for the class and he was an athlete, that he was really going to take a step forward. And he's done that this spring. He's been 90 to 95 so far this spring. And he kind of in a similar vein to Sean Reed Foley, he can offer you a little bit of everything. He's got plus life when he's right. It's kind of a bat-breaking sort of fastball with the movement. He can spot it up, get a chance for above-average command. The slider's an above-average pitch. The changeup has really showed well. So he's really got a strong overall arsenal, and you really just bet on the athlete. And
right.
He's got He's got pitching, but there's really not too much that Spencer Adams cannot do.
Yeah, I think you summed them up well. I mean, the scouts that I've talked to about him, said a lot of the same things. And the one thing, whether you believe, you know, whether you've seen the velocity really good or not at quite the same level as some others have seen, I think there is the athleticism. People love the body, and you really have to like the ability to spin a breaking ball. That slider seems like it's always there. He always shows scouts flashes at the very least. But this has a chance to be a true plus breaking ball down the line if it's not already. He sounds extremely interesting. Bukauskas, you've written about a guy who reclassified from the class of 2015 to the class of 2014. Just what this class needed, more high school power arms, and he brings another one. I guess some of the guys who've fallen from our preseason lists are also interesting to talk about, I think, in this update, Clint. Because Alex Verdugo, the left-hander out of Tucson, has kind of taken a hit, and so has Luis Ortiz. I feel like Luis Ortiz is really the guy who could really move up again if he's healthy, but it feels like the elbow is the story there, Clint. And, he missed a start or so. He came back. The velocity was more in that 90-92 range, according to the Fresno paper. And the scouts, I texted a couple scouts out there who said, yeah, that's what our guys had, same thing. So this is a guy who was thrown in the mid-90s for the 18U team and on the showcase circuit last summer. And Alex Verdugo, another guy who flashed, the ability. I mean, he was one of the most impressive guys, I thought, at Under Armour last year in Chicago at the baseball factory event up at Wrigley Field. I thought he was one of the better athletes there as far as just his ease of operation, hitting and pitching. And even though he's left-handed, consistently in that 89-92 range and touching more and has a pretty nice slider, it sounds like, according to everybody we've talked to, Alex Verdugo wants to go out as a hitter and is not playing with a tremendous amount of energy this spring and has missed a start with a cut on his finger. His stock seems like it's down and is harder to repair than Luis Ortiz's stock. Is that fair for me to characterize it that way, you think?
I guess so. I think you've spoken to more people out on the West Coast at this point than I have. But, yeah, with Luis Ortiz, he showed probably some of the most consistent velocity of anybody. I mean, he was, touching 94 at every single event this summer. He was up to 96 earlier this spring. So if he could just return to that, if the arm is healthy, there's no reason that he can't take a significant step up, because he's, I think up to this point, he had been in the top 20 of every single one of our rankings.
Right. Yeah, this is one of the reasons. Luis Ortiz is one of the biggest reasons why this draft class is thought of as a class with, if not not just above average velocity, but maybe historic high school velocity. And he was a big reason for that. Is there a comp that fits for Luis Ortiz? I think I've seen guys thrown around, but I think just because he's a strong-bodied and not overly projectable, he's not the opposite of Spencer Adams, but he's certainly a different animal than Spencer Adams, who we were just talking about before. There seems like there's less projection there, but it's not a bad body. It's just a strong body, right?
Yeah, one of the comparisons that I've heard, and I think this kind of goes with, the hard throwing aspects, is Joel Zamaya. He's listed it bigger than, 6'1 or 6'2, but probably actually smaller than that. I believe at Area Code Games, he actually measured in officially 6 foot, but it's a big, strong, durable frame. So that's probably the best physical comparison for him.
Yeah, and Verdugo, I have a hard time kind of getting a scouts to throw a comp on him, but, I kind of banged on him a minute ago. And the thing that surprised me was just how good he was last summer. And it felt like consistently good. I mean, the area codes, Clint, I wasn't there, but I just remember you writing about how Verdugo offensively stood out at area codes as well. And this could get interesting. They Saguaro High goes down to San Diego. I believe it's this weekend for the Lions Club tournament, correct?
I believe that already passed.
Did that happen this past weekend?
I believe so.
That was going to be a real big chance for him to match up with a lot of scouts around. And that was being kind of touted as, almost a make or break for Alex Verdugo from a draft standpoint. If this guy gets to college, he has a chance to be, Aaron and I have talked a lot this year about Arizona State and that team's kind of lack of physicality, but also the arms they have for next year's draft with Brent Lillick, power left-hander, Ryan Kellogg, more of a pitchability left-hander, the Canadian physical left-hander. They've also got Ryan Burr for next year's draft in their bullpen. You add Alex Verdugo to that, and suddenly some of the talk about Arizona State kind of being on the slide as a program might start to reverse. Because this guy, can you see this guy being a real impact two-way player at the college level?
Oh, no question. No question there. I mean, I think he could start right in the middle of almost anybody's lineup. I mean, it really is a pure bat. It's a pure hit tool with some power potential. And yeah, I mean, this stuff certainly plays in the rotation as well.
And he's, yeah, I mean, I've talked to scouts who've had him as a plus runner in the past as well, which is, I think, what, again, the most disappointing thing, I think, for scouts this year with Verdugo had just been the lack of consistent top effort. That's the way I would say it. Not that he's not trying, but that he hasn't been at his best for a lot of this season. And I think that, you know, the reason for that is the scouts out there have seen him, and they know how good he can be at his best. So, you know, Alex Verdugo is kind of a victim of his own success. He has set high standards for himself, and scouts are holding him to that. So, and that's, you know, that's been the case, Clint, for guys like Carlos Rodon, Trey Turner, Jeff Hoffman, too. I did want to wrap. I want to talk about a few more high school pitchers with you. And I mentioned Jeff Hoffman. He's an upstate New York guy, athletic. Was raw out of high school, wasn't even drafted, although there were teams that made runs at him out of high school that summer. Is Scott Blewett the next Jeff Hoffman? It seems like he's much more highly regarded at a similar stage than Jeff Hoffman was, but a right-hander out of Baldwinsville, New York. I just was reading a story before our podcast this morning about him in the Syracuse paper, about him pitching in, you know, upper 40s weather with rain and blustery conditions, and, you know, how he was had a stomach virus that morning and the velocity was down, this kind of thing. Feels like, again, being a northern pitcher with velocity and that athleticism that Blewett has, he has one of the more volatile draft stocks of this entire class just because it's upstate New York and it's going to be late when he really sees, if he sees, any good weather at all. What's the summation on Scott Blewett, stuff-wise and body-wise, and do you think he's a guy who could pitch his way into the first 20-25 picks if he finishes strong?
Oh, I think there's no question. He was one of the guys who came on the strongest towards the end of the summer. His outing in Jupiter was very impressive. He was up to 95. It's really a great-looking body. You know, it's 6'6", 225. It really is just a great foundation to start with. He's also young for the class, but that's really how you kind of drop a big power pitcher. And on the off-speed stuff, it's a little inconsistent, but you'd expect that with any sort of, you know, Northeast multi-sport athlete. But the slider, the breaking ball has shown, you know, above-average potential, and he has some strike-throwing ability for a big guy that size from a cold weather state. So there's no question that he could make a very, very strong push and get into the back half of the first round here.
Yeah, I mean, the track record of the fresh northern arm, you know, I remember some of the misses, you know, although I don't know if I could call Matt Tora a fresh arm because he was kind of used pretty aggressively in college up at UMass. But, you know, Tyler Beattie was a first round pick a couple of years out of there. You know, I'm thinking back in the day of the Chris Carpenters of the world and those kind of guys. I think a lot of scouts have a lot of ways to dream on a guy like Scott Blewett because the arm is fresh, the body is, I don't know if you'd say a premium body, but that's certainly a plus. There's just not a lot of, you know, you just have less data, it feels like, on Scott Blewett than you do on some of these other warm weather pitchers, at least at this point of the year. That's fair to say. I mean, I kind of like the idea of the fresh arm, but it feels like the weather's been so bad this spring, Clint, everywhere. I can't imagine that scouts have really seen his best this spring yet.
No, and I think that's true for everybody up north. And speaking with a few cross-checkers, they're kind of going to bide their time a little bit just for a few more weeks to wait and go up and see some of the prime-time northern arms, whether it be Joe Gatto, Cam Varga. You know, wait for them to settle in a little bit because there has still, as you mentioned, consistent snow flurries in those parts of the country. And, you know, it's tough to miss a day. So, yeah, those guys are all primed to potentially move up here once they get a chance to make their move.
Now, I just mentioned Tyler Beattie's name at least, Clint. You know, he's still toward the top of our college rankings. Carlos Rodon is still the top college pitcher on our list. And we've got a couple emails when I tweeted out about the – I shouldn't say – we have a couple tweets about asking about Rodon. The Bronx Empire asks, what's Carlos Rodon's ceiling based on what he's shown this spring? Average number two, strong number three starter. You know, Clint, I guess the thing is, depends on when you saw him this spring. Again, like you mentioned, you'd seen him three times. I've been there for two of those starts that you saw. You know, it sounds like the big factor for Carlos is which start you saw. The last five innings, basically, of that Duke start over at Durham Bulls Athletic Park, which has been a scene of many good starts for Carlos Rodon, ACC tournaments, including last year. He was at his best, at his absolute best. Was not at his absolute best this past Friday against Boston College. What's your take on Carlos's ultimate ceiling?
That's a great question. Like you said, it really just depends on when you saw him, because frankly, the start against Duke, it was so strong that I don't think we would be having the discussions about him being down. If he had been able to replicate that same start, you know, the majority of his times out, it really was kind of the Carlos of old. You know, I think Aaron put it best when he said vintage Carlos. I mean, it was 94 to 96,
yep.
And a lot easier than we'd seen with the delivery earlier this spring. You know, touch of 98, and the slider was incredible. The fact that he got 20 swings and misses on his slider that day, and the changeup showed a lot better. So, yeah, really, I mean, if you saw that guy that day, there's no reason that he could not be at least a number two starter. But in some of the starts that we've seen, like the start on Friday against Boston College, you'd probably go with more of a number three starter with a chance to have it a little higher than that. But it was primarily 90 to 93, touching a few fours as the game went on. But because of the reduced hand speed, the slider was not, you know, quite as explosive or quite as tight as it had been the previous week. And he did not use the changeup as much. And as Coach Elliot Avon said, you know, he commanded the slider well. I think he threw more than two-thirds of his slider's four strikes. But he did not command the fastball as well, which has kind of been a consistent theme for Carlos so far this spring.
I think that's exactly right. That's the separator. That's what made him so special. I guess it was the first time that you'd ever seen him pitch, right, against Cuba last year, at least in person.
Yep.
I mean, it must have been like the 15th time I'd probably seen Carlos over his first 2 years. And, you know, that's as good as it gets. So, again, I mean, the question is based off this spring, but no one's basing what they've seen, a draft decision or an evaluation on Carlos Rodon off this spring. You know, no, teams just don't do that. They don't, you know, you're not drafting Carlos Rodon in a vacuum. Certainly what he's done this spring is a factor from a workload standpoint. You know, not so much the pitches thrown for me, but the sliders thrown. He throws an awful lot of sliders, Clinton. And that fastball command just feels like it stems from, it's almost like the slider's too good. You know, like last year when Jonathan Gray, came out and the Rockies did not allow him to throw his slider. It was all fastballs and changeups when he first signed and first came out in a short season ball. I feel like you're going to see that same, you know, that same playbook from Carlos Rodon when he signs this summer. No matter who drafts him, whether it's first, second, third, whoever drafts this guy's going to say, you're going to have to go out there and not throw sliders. And that's going to be very difficult, I think, for Carlos Rodon to do because the slider is so good and because he does command it. But it feels like the less he uses his fastball, the less effective it is. And both from a command standpoint, but also the velocity, like you said. And there was one inning, really, Clint, the other night where his tempo was better, the velocity was better, a lot more 94s than 90s. It was just so odd to see it just like for an inning or two. And he talked about it with us after the game about how he does feel like he's a little bit more able now, certainly, than he was 2 years ago as a freshman or even last year to make in-game adjustments. But he wasn't just quite able to maintain that. It just feels like we see flashes of premium Carlos, but we have not seen it on a consistent basis. That's why he's no longer number one on the list. But I do think Jonathan Gray is actually a pretty decent comparison point because they're both physical. I guess you would say it's fair to say maxed out physically, but that's not necessarily a bad thing. He doesn't have Jonathan Gray's premium velocity. Sounds like the sliders are pretty comparable. You certainly give Carlos an edge because he's left-handed, But if push came to shove and you asked me who would I like want better, who would I want more, I'd probably have to say Jonathan Gray over Carlos Rodon just because Gray was trending up coming to the draft, Carlos not trending in that same direction. But they feel like they're fairly comparable from one just from very recent draft classes.
I think that's a great comparison. It really is. Yeah, and you mentioned that he has not been at his best consistently, but one of the guys who was at his best last week was Jeff Hoffman. And speaking to a number of evaluators there, I mean, he struck out 16 of the 29 hitters that he faced. It was probably his best outing of his college career. And the breaking ball had not been as consistent for him this spring as some people had hoped, but it sounds like it was a very, very good pitch on Thursday, and I think he got 13 of his 16 strikeouts with his breaking ball. So it sounds like with that outing and the scouting heat that was in attendance for that with some key decision makers from the top five teams, it sounds like that was a very strong outing for him.
And Clint, it also sounds like that was a pretty necessary outing for Jeff Hoffman because the buzz that we got going into that midseason update, I mean, I remember talking to somebody who said, you know, you guys might be a little high on him. And we kind of preserved him there at number five. I guess he'd come into the year at number two or three. We had him fifth, and we definitely got some feedback that was maybe a little bit higher than the consensus. It felt like Jeff Hoffman, even maybe more than Carlos, it felt like Jeff Hoffman and Carlos Rodon both needed kind of the big outings that they had the last 2 weeks, even though Carlos was in a loss against Duke. Again, the stuff was so good. And then Jeff Hoffman, the same thing. It felt like he had been just, again, so inconsistent with that breaking ball, Clint. And the swing and miss, the numbers, the analytical organizations, of which there are more and more every year, the organizations that really crunch the numbers on college performance, before Thursday, Jeff Hoffman was really slipping with those teams because the strikeout rate had really slipped. Talk about if you could elaborate a little bit on that and some of the research you've done on that.
Yeah, I went back and I got a chance to look at the top 10 college pitchers from 2009 to 2013, so a five-year sample size. I believe we had about 33 or 34 pitchers within that range, and he had by far the lowest strikeout rate of any of those pitchers. I believe the average was close to 10 strikeouts per nine, and this is on a career basis, and his career rate was lower than eight, so I believe was about 7.2, which would leave him a full strikeout lower than the lowest guy on that list, which was Mike Leake, and certainly those are very different sorts of pitchers. So as you made the point, you know, the analytics organizations who are looking at the statistics, he would certainly fall significantly short of any of those performance standards for the top 10. But with the 16 strikeout performance that he did have, he did push his strikeout to nine rate for this season, at least above a strikeout per nine, I believe at 9.2.
Yeah, you mentioned Mike Leake. I like that comp. Scouts have liked that comp on Aaron Nola to Mike Leake. Tyler Beede, you know, these guys were toward the top of our list at the start of the year. I still feel like Tyler Beede's kind of losing steam the more this goes on. Again, from the analytics standpoint, Clint, he just walks too many batters, period. He just doesn't throw enough strikes. It's pretty simple. I feel the college pitchers who've moved up the most are these left-handers. Kyle Freeland, Brandon Finnegan. Kyle Freeland at Evansville, Brandon Finnegan out of TCU, and Sean Newcomb out of Hartford. Just feels like those three college left-handed pitchers, Clint, I almost feel like we're almost low on those guys in some ways, and we moved Freeland up very aggressively to number nine, Finnegan at 12. I feel like we're light on Finnegan with Newcomb at 19. It feels like Brandon Finnegan is probably – and Aaron and I talked about this a little bit yesterday at the college podcast, but you could elaborate if you'd like. It feels like Brandon Finnegan and Kyle Freeland are two guys that they've been so consistently explosive this spring. It's just going to be hard to keep those guys out of the first 10 to 12 picks in the draft.
Certainly. And Kyle Freeland, we were both very fortunate. We got a chance to see his start, I believe it was 2 weeks ago, against Charlotte, and he was absolutely outstanding. That started his string of 15 strikeout performances. It was really premium command, and that's kind of the defining trait for Kyle Freeland. He is just a consistent strike thrower with stuff, which is very, very tough to find. After his most recent performance when he had 12 strikeouts against no walks. That pushed his strikeout to walk ratio for the year to 21.8-1. So he is limited free passes more than any other pitcher this spring, and it really hasn't even been close. And you couple that with a slider that is at least plus at its best, and I mean, the fastball was consistently 90 to 93, touching 95. We heard it was up to 96 within his last start. So it's a premium strike thrower with plus stuff.
Yeah, I mean, just statistically, like you said, that's the 21-1 strikeout to walk is kind of mind blowing. He's sixth in Division I among pitchers in walks per nine. You know, Thomas Eshelman at Cal State Fullerton, who's known for never walking anybody, is barely better than Freeland. It's 3 walks in 76 innings for Thomas Eshelman, who's not draft eligible this year. But just if you listen to these podcasts at all, if you listen to any of the college podcasts, you've heard us talk about Thomas Eshelman and just how mind-blowing his command is. Kyle Freeland has Thomas Eshelman command, and he combines it with basically Carlos Rodon stuff. I mean, it's the slider's pretty sick. And we were very lucky, Clint, that day to be there for that. I'm glad that you came by my office before you left the building, and I'm glad that I decided to go with you, because that was just a sick display. And you know, I like the comparison that we got. You know, it's guys, scouts who have been area scouts in North Carolina are guys who are going to make this comparison. And we were in Charlotte, so that's, you know, who a lot of our scouts that we were talking to were that day. But the, you know, there aren't the only ones who say, you know, he's kind of similar to an Andrew Miller in terms of the tall, lean frame, but Andrew Miller with strike throwing ability. You know, that's Andrew Miller was the top pitcher available on our board, and we thought he was the top rated pitcher on most boards in the 2006 draft. Obviously, the top pitcher probably should have been Tim Lincecum. He's won 2 Cy Young awards. I know he's faded a bit, but you know, Max Scherzer was also in that draft. Pretty good draft for pitchers when you go back and think about it. But Kyle Freeland seems like it's a similar body, not as tall, which is probably a good thing. Athletic. Finnegan's kind of the opposite kind of body. I mean, he got some Billy Wagner comparisons last summer. This is a guy who's really come along. And then, you know, Newcomb is completely different from those guys. What's, you know, the analytics teams, again, we've talked about that. How do you think teams are going to crunch the Sean Newcomb numbers, which are kind of out of this world, as he's really dominated inferior competition?
Yeah, I believe it was he went 7 starts before he allowed an earned run, and I got a chance to see him 6 weeks ago against East Tennessee State, and guys just did really – they never put good swings on him. I think he allowed 2 hits on the day, but both of those were probably actually errors. But one of the things that that is not in his favor, though, he does not really command the fastball quite as much as you'd like. I believe he's walking about 4 per 9, right. But guys just don't get good swings on his stuff. And a lot of people have said that this, for a college pitcher, he has a chance to really be as different in one calendar year from now as any pitcher out there, just given, you know, where he's from, the body, the physicality, and everything that else that he brings to the table, because he's extremely young for the class. You can kind of dream, even though you don't really dream on college pitchers, you dream more on the high school guys. You can kind of dream on him a little bit, which is atypical for that. But yeah, the slider has improved. It's got a chance to be at least an average pitch, but it's extremely fun to watch because the velocity is just so easy.
And I think I said the part that stands out is, and I'm not trying to say anything about the coaches at Hartford, but, you know, he has been at Hartford, and, you know, that's Justin Blood, actually, who's the head coach there, correct?
Yep.
I'm a big Justin Blood fan. Justin was a pitcher at Franklin Pierce in the late 90s, early aughts. You know, I believe they may have been NAIA at that time. I believe they were Division II, but I'm not sure. But it's the premier baseball program in New Hampshire and in upper New England, I would say. And, you know, from a draft standpoint, it's probably the best program other than UConn in the Northeast. I mean, just from a producing players for the draft standpoint. And he was a pitcher there, then he was an assistant coach there, now he's the head coach at Hartford. This guy does know what he's doing. At the same time, you know, you can only do so much with the weather there. So you get Sean Newcomb in Arizona or Florida on a throwing program, in instructs, in spring training, with pro coaching. You just have to imagine that this is a guy who could really take off. And I guess the most encouraging part of all this, Clint, is that both Newcomb and Freeland really showed these flashes and were quite good in the Cape last summer, and they both carried over that enthusiasm with scouts this spring, as opposed to some other players who might go up to the Cape and flash it and then don't perform in the spring. These two guys have done it in the summer, and they've done it again in the spring. That's why I think both these guys are in our top 20.
No question. And with Freeland, he was one of the most consistent performers out there. I believe he had a 10-1 strikeout to walk ratio on the Cape, so it's not just what he's doing this spring against, right, less than elite competition. So he really just does have a consistent track record there.
Just going back to our midseason list, a couple of the college hitters who I feel like, this is not a great year for college hitters. I feel like we say that every year. But two guys I did want to talk on the positive side. If you're looking for a corner bat, Clint, there have been a couple of corner bats who I feel like have emerged a little bit more of an option this year than maybe they were coming into the season. For me, that's Casey Gillespie and Mike Pappy. Gillespie, the first baseman at Wichita State. Pappy at UVA. He's played first base and he's played outfield. Now with Derek Fisher back from his broken hammock for the Cavaliers, probably going to wind up seeing Pappy back at first base some. What's your impression of those two guys and their kind of their draft stock? I feel like those are the two college bats who may have helped themselves more than anybody this year.
Yeah, Pappy, even coming into the year, he really was graded out very strongly in the sabermetric measures. I mean, his walk rate was as good as nearly anybody in the class coming into the year, and that has not abated at all. It's been above 20%, and he's hitting for power. It's a tough place to hit for power. I believe the park factor is around 80 or so. It's a big park, but he's shown a lot of doubles power. He's actually a much better athlete than you'd expect. He actually has posted plus run times. I don't know if he's going to do that consistently. His speed might not play at that level consistently, but he's actually got an above average arm too. So there's really a lot to like there. And even though he is playing first base, because of the above average arm strength, he probably can profile in right field. But because of his consistent performance and everything that he brings to the table, he's certainly got a chance to go maybe in the back half of the first round or, the compensation round.
It's really surprising to me that Virginia just has not broken out offensively. They just still haven't quite broken down that door like we thought that this offense would. Big test for them, and a lot of heat's going to be in there this weekend against Florida State down in Tallahassee. Luke Weaver, who, if you haven't seen it, we do have some 2 minutes plus a video of Luke Weaver from Friday night over in Winston-Salem where Josh, Jim Currier, Norris went out to go see him. We have a plethora of inside joke names at the Baseball America offices these days, so apologize if we break out the inside joke names from time to time. But Currier was out there on Friday. I think there are going to be a lot of guys that go watch this UVA offense, this lineup. And Clint, it's so consistent. Scouts love this UVA team. They love this lineup, the athleticism they see. Aaron and I talked about it yesterday. They just have it broken out. And here, Pappy went hitless this weekend against North Carolina, which, is a good North Carolina pitching staff, but it's certainly not a great UNC pitching staff, certainly not by recent North Carolina standards. So it's going to be interesting to see kind of how Pappy goes. I'll be fascinated to watch. He's under 300 now, but I'm a big Pappy believer. I like him quite a bit. Like you said, I think the athleticism surprises some people. Gillespie's not about athleticism. He's about mashing the ball. Another guy who walks a lot and hits for power. And he kind of fits that corner bat profile.
He absolutely does. Yeah, he's got plus power. You love the switch hitting ability. And, like you mentioned, he walks a ton. He's walking about nearly two times for every single strikeout. And he's really just punishing the ball. He's certainly up there as far as college draft eligible players in terms of home run and power production. I believe he had the second highest isolated slugging. So there's really a lot to like there. Now that Aaron got a chance to get a good look at him and really liked what he saw on his trip through the Midwest.
Yeah, and you just don't see too many college guys with double-digit home runs these days. Gillespie's tied for seventh in the country with 10 home runs at the Division I level. But A.J. Reed at Kentucky, we should wrap up with this. I mean, it's just funny you look at the official NCAA stats, and it has number one, home runs, A.J. Reed, Kentucky, position, pitcher, 16 home runs. One of my first draft calls was A.J. Reed, more of a pitcher, Clint. now we're hearing, you know, I just don't think the power can be ignored. I think the fact that, and you know, you don't even have to comment much on AJ, but to me it just feels like 16 home runs in 40 games in this hitting environment in college baseball with these bats, that guy's going to go out as a hitter. And I just don't think there's any question about it. I do think there's question about how much bat speed he has. I do think there are questions about can he handle, would he get eaten up by the level of velocity that you just see as a regular, as a matter of course, in the South Atlantic League or the Carolina League or, you know, A-ball leagues compared to what he's seeing in the Southeastern Conference this year. I think those are legitimate questions, but I still don't think that's going to dissuade anybody from taking A.J. Reed as a bat. Clint, we've talked a lot about the high school pitching and the velocity in this. It feels like there's other I should have asked you this earlier, but it feels like there are other high school power arms that are kind of emerging, maybe weren't on that midseason top 50, but other guys who are emerging who've shown those mid-90s velocity. Who are some of those, maybe some of those breakout guys on the high school side this year?
I think everyone that evaluators had a wait-and-see approach on was Bryce Montes de Oca out of Lawrence, Kansas. He's a big hulking presence at 6'8", about 270 pounds, and he had Tommy John surgery just about a year ago at this time, and so he did not pitch at all in the showcase circuit, wasn't All-American at a few different events and whatnot, but he had his first start 2 weeks ago. It was actually just the week following our update, and he sat 94 to 97 on 35 pitches. Then last week, he was 92 to 96 with a little better strike throwing ability with that on 45 pitches. So you're going to start to see his pitch count ramp up the more that he gets away from the 1 year mark with his Tommy John surgery. But he really has a chance to warrant some pretty good attention here. I think just because of the limited looks that evaluators were able to get, you know, last summer and whatnot, he's probably going to be one of the highest priority guys so far. I mean, throughout the rest of the spring, as we all sprint to the finish line for the draft.
So how young was Montes de Oca when he had Tommy John surgery? Was he 16?
Let's see here. I believe he's an April birthday. So yeah, I think he was right on the borderline between 16 and 17 when he had it.
Wow.
Yeah. And he was up to 95. Actually, evaluators did get a chance to see him a little bit at Jupiter in 2012. Nobody was really – I was very fortunate. I kind of stumbled onto that game. I saw him warming up. And, you know, within a few pitches of seeing a 6'8" guy who's touching 95, you know, probably about 30 or 40 evaluators were there in about a matter of 10 or 15 pitches. So guys did get a chance to see him a little bit, but certainly not nearly as much as you'd like.
Yeah, that's a pretty unique case. It sounds like one of the other guys who's kind of popped up here, not so much popped up, but whose velocity has spiked this spring is Cody Reed, the high school pitcher down in Alabama. Not as tall as Bryce Montes de Oca. I guess he's not as big, but he's not far off. sounds like a very big kid, very physical, Vanderbilt commit. You know, we've actually talked, Clint, about how North Carolina's recruiting class is just littered with breakout pitchers. Vanderbilt always is. You know, the Commodores do a great job recruiting. They've got one of the wild cards in this year's class on their own roster, and Adam Ravenel. You could talk about him a little bit because he's pretty unique. You profiled him in our stats wrap. They've got, you know, Justice Sheffield, who's come out with very good stuff this spring, but at the same time is 5'10" left-hander. And then they've got Cody Reed, who's this hulking, physical, hard-throwing left-hander out of Alabama who's got some heat and got some starting to have some helium. And then North Carolina's class, we've mentioned Bukauskas, Flaherty, Jack Flaherty, who I think was thought of more as a corner bat. Now, we wrote about him in Draft Tracker last week, so the consensus is this guy's a pitcher. I got a Jeff Supon comp thrown on him the other day, and maybe that doesn't sound that impressive to some people, but, you know, Jeff Supon was a big leaguer for he made a lot of money. You know, Jeff Supon made a lot of money pitching in the major leagues. He played from 19 – it was in the major leagues from 1995 to 2012. Let's see what Baseball Reference says. His estimated career earnings were $58 million. So I think that if Jack Flaherty had a Jeff Supon career, he'd be pretty happy. Guy won 140 big league games. That seems like another guy who's not moved up necessarily because of his velocity, but because of the pitchability seems like it stands out. And he is, you know, a North Carolina recruit like Bukauskas, who we talked about, like Cam Vargas, Cam Varga, I should say, out of Ohio. Joseph Gatto. There's just a lot of that recruiting class has a chance to take a hit. And there's another kind of pop up guy who's a North Carolina signee, right? You went and saw him last night, correct?
He is pitching today.
Today,
yeah, 6:30 today. So I'll be going out to see him. But Ryder Ryan out of North Mecklenburg, who's the son of Sean Ryan, who was a former minor leaguer. He was kind of a two way guy throughout the summer. Touching 90 when he did get a chance to get on the mound, but he's been up to 96 so far this spring and in previous starts, and really going to, looking forward to what he has. But one of the things that stands out about him is really just kind of his feel for pitching, for how inexperienced he is on the mound. Guys have not been bashful to say that he has a chance for above average command, with a plus fastball velocity, and he's got some feel for a breaking ball. So he really stands out with just his pitching aptitude, despite being more of a third baseman slash catcher coming into the spring.
And that's really what stood out to me was the scouts I talked to just talking about his command. I mean, that is just really that's just stunning. I mean, it's really stunning that a guy with so little experience. That's what stands out for both him and for Flaherty. And then Ryan combines that with a big velocity. Clint, anybody you want to touch on that we've missed on today's podcast so far?
No, I think we've done a good job hitting everybody else. But just because you talked about him, Cody Reed out of Alabama, he was on the showcase circuit. I mean, big, strong, physical body, about 6'2", 240, some heftiness and whatnot. But he was mostly high 80s. Guys really didn't get a chance to get good looks on him. He was pretty deceptive with his fastball, could spot it up, have some movement, but he's been up to 95 or even a touch higher this spring. So we sound like a broken record, but a lot of these high school arms just have seen significant velocity increases so far this spring. He's certainly one of the guys who fits that bill.
Well, last but not least, we do have a bunch of questions on Twitter I should have asked. I'll run these by you, Clint. Matthew Veazey asks, give me a couple starting pitchers likely not to be drafted till the comp round or second round, but will start in Major League Baseball. I did mention one earlier. He's dropped on our list, I think, just because he hasn't quite been explosive this year. But I think it's very fair to say that Luke Weaver could get drafted a little bit higher than the second round, but he's like a comp round, second round talent. And we have Matt Imhoff, a left-hander out of Cal Poly, in that same range. Those are two that just jump out to me, Clint. Are there some high school pitchers that you'd say, like as a Kobe Johnson or a Gatto or some of those guys, fit more in that comp to second round range?
I think a guy that we get a chance to see for the NHSI, Foster Griffin, because of his strike throwing ability and feel for his changeup and just aptitude for pitching. I think he's certainly somebody who could, fit into that grouping with a big, strong physical body. I think he kind of fits the bill there.
And I think Flaherty, we mentioned him, a guy that you've mentioned a couple times, Austin Gomber at Florida Atlantic. If the breaking ball comes along, he probably fits that profile, really, doesn't he? I don't see Austin Gomber as a threat to go in the first round or supplemental round. He might even be more of a third round pick, but this is a good, very good body. The arm works, pretty good velocity. This is a guy who, even with a 2-6 season this year, feels like he has a chance to be a second, third round pick, right?
I think that's a great call. The defining characteristic for him is really just strike throwing ability. He measured out very well in all the control metrics, and he's got a three pitch mix with a chance for an above average changeup with a great 6'5" body.
Yeah, the body is definitely plus on Austin Gomber. Definitely makes me. It was fun to watch him last year at the regional in Chapel Hill. Definitely something to watch for with him. I mean, if you believe in pitch counts and you want to watch pitcher health, all that kind of stuff, he was used on one-day rest last year, just like Kent Emanuel was. The Kent Emanuel use got all the attention because he was draft eligible last year. But in the very same regional, Austin Gomber, who's a very similar pitcher to Kent Emanuel with a better delivery, did exactly the same thing. So if it concerned you with one pitcher, it probably should concern you with the other. Joseph Carela, I believe I'm pronouncing his last name correctly, wonders, has Tukey Toussaint's stock fallen with an okay season? Is he still a definite first-round pick? I don't feel like his stock has fallen, Clint. It feels like actually he's been a little bit better this year. He hasn't flashed the premium stuff. And he hasn't put it all together, but he's flashed the velocity. he's shown, it feels like, consistently better command, and the changeup's really come a long way for Tukey from last summer.
Yeah, I would kind of disagree with that statement that he threw out there, because, I mean, he's really just shown everything that you hoped that he would throughout the summer. I mean, we knew that he was a great athlete and really had a chance to come together quickly, and it's certainly not there yet, but the majority of his starts, he's been mid-90s, touching 97. Like you said, I mean, the changeup, that's really what's really stood out so far this spring. He's got a chance to be an above-average pitch, and he has one of the best curveballs in the high school class. When you put it all together, it's a pretty intriguing package. And, yes, I believe he is a lock to go in the first round and has a chance to go in the top half.
And finally, Simon, whose Twitter handle is @FedererFunhouse, asks, any inkling about the Blue Jays, how would you compare the 11th best player this year to Phil Bickford? That's an interesting way to look at it, because I think it's still a bit too early to start matching up. I mean, we could do a mock draft and just match teams with here's the kind of players they draft. But, I mean, like, we're starting to hear some names tied to some organizations. That usually, I think, really isn't going to come together for another couple of weeks at least, Clint. But, you know, Phil Bickford was a third high school pitcher drafted last year through the Blue Jays did not sign 10th overall. He's now at Cal State Fullerton. You had Cole Stewart to the Twins. You had Trey Ball to the Red Sox. And then you had Phil Bickford, who didn't sign. It feels like Phil Bickford's awfully good. He really came on strong late last year. But at the same time, it feels like this, we have this top two. I think that most scouts would say they like Kolick and Aiken better than they liked Ball and Stewart last year. But Bickford, would you take Bickford over, say, a Tukey Toussaint or Grant Holmes, who are kind of the two guys in contention for third best high school pitcher in this draft? It feels like there's a little bit of a gap after those top two guys. And then there's not as much separation between Tukey, Holmes, Sean Reed Foley, and that next group of high school pitchers. Do you follow me? Bickford might compare very favorably to Tukey Toussaint.
I think both the guys from this year's class you mentioned with Holmes and Toussaint would probably grade out higher there. And it's not just comparing it versus Bickford. It was Bickford with the options that were there versus the options that are going to be here and the guys that we have in that range, you know, with Fetty, Holmes, and Finnegan, you know, those are the sort of options they're going to have there. And I think, you know, that is probably a much more intriguing decision this year as opposed to last year.
Yeah, and the depth on the high school pitching side is just much more significant. So it's going to be I have a feeling that you're going to see teams draft some of these college pitchers, the quote-unquote more sure things, in those first 20-25 picks. But it feels like the supplemental second-round, third-round, Clint, could be very, very high school heavy.
No question there. I think that's really kind of the strength of this class is really just the depth within those middle rounds.
I'm with you. Well, Clint, good stuff. I want to thank all of our listeners for the questions. We had good questions today on the Twitter machine, which is always fun. Well, if you're not already following us on Twitter for your draft coverage, obviously at Aaron Fitt, not on this podcast, but at Aaron Fitt has you covered from the college standpoint and is always a great follow at draft time. He's at Clint_BA. Clint, I appreciate that your focus is mostly on the producing content for the pay model of Baseball America. But step up your tweet game as we get closer. Only 377 tweets for Clint Longenecker at this point. So
it's horrible. I need to step up my production, no question.
But I'm at John Manuel BA. I try to keep my tweet game on the baseball side these days. But the fact that I tweet about things non-baseball is the reason that there are 22,000 tweets out there, which is kind of embarrassing. But we will be there for you as the draft approaches June 5th, 6th, and 7th. Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, the first week of June. So plenty more draft coverage coming at baseballamerica.com and hopefully another draft podcast coming soon. We hope we will not make you wait as long for the next one as we made you wait for this one. Hope you enjoyed it. For Clint Longenecker, I'm John Manuel. This podcast is powered by Louisville Slugger. Leave your mark with a 2014 attack raid and assault bat lineup this season. Stronger, lighter, farther, Louisville Slugger. We'll see you next time. So long, everybody.